Welcome to Influencer Business, where influencers get help with the hard stuff. Think of us as your business Bible. We're a team of influencers and entrepreneurs dedicated to bringing professional resources and infrastructure to our community. I'm Rich Scutellari, CEO of Trove. I'm an entrepreneur focused on helping influencers run and grow their businesses with the resources and information they need. I host this podcast as well as a live webinar called Office Hours, which takes place every Wednesday. Here, I dig deeper into each weekly topic and answer all of your most pressing questions. Our weekly podcast features guests from across the professional landscape, sharing their experiences and advice and answering questions from the Trove community, which you can submit on our website at www.trovebusiness.com. Welcome back to Influencer Business. I'm your host, Rich Scutellari. Very excited to have you with us here this week. We have a great episode lined up for you. We're being joined today by Dr. Dendy Engelman, who is a board-certified and nationally acclaimed dermatologic surgeon. She sees patients here in New York, but has been in every magazine you can think of. She's been on a number of television shows as an expert. Really a wonderful person, an amazing doctor. She's done over 15,000 surgeries in her career as a doctor. Really practiced, knows her stuff, has done surgeries on everything you can possibly think of, and really an expert in her field. And she's also actually an influencer as well. And so she's going to join us today to talk about how she built her practice, how she built up her name recognition within the industry, and how she uses her platform to help further her practice and provide better care for her patients. But before we get to the interview with Dr. Dendy, please leave us that 5-star rating, give us that glowing review. We always appreciate it. It helps us grow the podcast and spread the word. With that out of the way, let's get to our interview with Dr. Dendy. Dr. Dendy, thanks so much for joining us today on Influencer Business.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty, we're going to ask you the first 5 questions we ask all of our guests.
Okay.
So what was the last meal you cooked?
The last meal I cooked. Does baking count?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Definitely.
My son, who will be 4 in a couple months, loves to make these little peanut butter and Reese's peanut butter cup cookies.
Ooh.
And they're very good. We call them Dendy Delights, even though they're literally 2 ingredients.
That's awesome.
And I obviously like science a lot, being a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I feel like baking is much more scientific. There's less, you know, I'm not a creative cook. Okay. At all. I come from a long line of beautiful homemakers who I have disappointed royally in that space. But, you know, I can't taste something and be like, oh, it just needs a smidge of cumin or something.
Sure,
but I can definitely follow a recipe and like be very exact with my... So for me, that's more of a scientific approach in baking.
Okay.
So there's where I will go. But I, living in Manhattan, you know, we can order the best food and have it to your door in 30 minutes. And so I certainly take advantage of that.
Oh, and we do too. Absolutely. All right. What was the last TV show you binge watched?
The last show, we're going to sound like we're 1,000 years old, and we might be. But when I was pregnant with my first child, my husband and I never get to see any TV.
Sure,
and the news was kind of depressing. So we just decided we were going to do something very lighthearted that was like 22 minutes.
Sure.
And so we have watched every single episode from start to finish of Frasier.
Oh, really? Throwback.
Yeah.
Frasier's a great show.
It's
highly underrated.
And so good.
Highly underrated.
I'm a little embarrassed and kind of a bit proud to say that we've seen them all. But
that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Who's your favorite character? Is Frasier or
Niles?
Niles. It's got to be
the
Niles.
The best.
Yeah, absolutely. The last concert you went to?
I went probably 2 years ago now to see Justin Timberlake at the Garden.
One of my all-time favorites.
Great.
Great performer.
That guy's a triple threat.
Yeah, he really is. All right, well, the last book you read cover to cover?
That would be Girl, Wash Your Face by Rachel Hollis.
Very apropos. Very,
isn't that good?
Yeah.
It wasn't very derm heavy, but despite the title.
Yeah.
But I like her a lot, and that was very inspirational and reinforcing. I don't think I need we all need self-help, but I do wash my face every day.
I would bet that if anybody has a handle on how to wash your face, it's you.
Yeah.
All right. The last city you visited outside of New York and why?
I went most recently to Newport Beach, California. I'd never been.
Mm-hmm.
I flew into LAX. I was sitting next to Zendaya. which I thought it was Zendaya, but I didn't want to introduce myself because I wasn't sure how to say her name. But it was right after Fashion Week, and she had just done the show with Tommy Hilfiger. And I didn't even know that that was her until we came off the plane, and there was like paparazzi. And I don't even know how they get all the way to the gate. You have to have a ticket.
Oh, yeah. That's
but they were there, and
really?
They knew she was on the flight, and they had like the things for her to sign, and there were photographers.
Really?
So then I was like, oh, that's somebody. and the reason I was going down there was to attend a wedding of one of my colleagues.
Oh, okay.
And it was one of the most beautiful weddings I've ever seen.
Yeah. LA weddings are always
really
a
pretty.
Trip. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Can you give us a little bit of background on you and your journey to where you are now?
Sure. I was born and raised in South Carolina. I'm from a little town called Somerville, which is right outside of Charleston.
Sure.
And my whole family on both sides kind of is from that region.
Yeah.
And my dad is a doctor. My mom is an RN by trade and then went back to school and is a therapist and has her practice in our home.
Okay.
And so I always thought that I would do general medicine like my dad.
Sure, yeah.
I wanted to be a doctor since the 10th grade. And when he took our chemistry class to the hospital.
Oh, that's cool.
For a field trip. And before that, I wanted to be a lawyer. I'm not sure why, but I'm very glad I made the switch.
Yeah.
And so ever since 10th grade, I wanted to be a doctor. I was very like focused on that. Mm-hmm. And that was my goal.
Yeah.
And I went to college. I played volleyball in college. Mm-hmm. And I went to a small little liberal arts school and then went to medical school in Charleston where my mom had gone, my dad had gone, my grandmother had gone.
But you double majored in college too while playing volleyball, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you were, what, psychology and
French.
Mm-hmm. So neither of which kind of leads to general medicine, right?
I use the psychology every day.
Yeah,
I think everyone needs
a
major in that. but I also did pre-med. So that was kind of the basics of...
It sounds like a huge load considering you were playing sports, two majors, and pre-med.
Yeah, I like to be busy. But it was a lot.
Yeah.
The good news is for our school, which is called Wofford College, it's very small, but they have a huge travel abroad program.
Oh, okay.
And so it was very easy, honestly, to complete your major in that because you went for a semester and got so many credits. So I was basically finished with my French major because I started a little bit more elevated because I'd taken four years of it in high school.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So I think I was finished with my French major by the beginning of my junior year. So
that
was kind of an adjuvant. And a lot of people double major in a language. I will say that it doesn't come in so handy in New York City, especially with medicine.
I took French too, and I was, you know, I grew up in California.
Yeah,
that was a big mistake.
I know. I mean, I love the language. And,
yeah.
And when I go to Paris with certain brands, like I'm able to speak there and maybe with my Southern accent, probably discuss them with my French. But at least they know that we try.
We all discuss them with our accents. Yeah. It doesn't have anything to do with the Southern piece. But
So then I went to medical school. What brought me to New York was training at Mount Sinai. So I did my general medicine year there, and then I was finishing my training in Charleston doing my residency, and then I did my fellowship in skin cancer surgery and procedural dermatology back in New York, and was going to flip-flop back home again.
Yeah.
And had a job teaching at the medical university where I trained, but then I was here for like 2 weeks and was like, I'm not going to go home. And that was 11 years ago.
Wow, that's great. Because you also, it's an interesting story, right? Because you almost didn't go into dermatology.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Weren't you like, tell us a little bit about that, how this almost didn't happen.
Yeah, so you did do your research. so I come from a long line of general practitioner kind of doctors of the town. I used to go deliver babies with my dad in high school. And, you know, we would never go into any restaurant where my dad wasn't somebody's doctor and had probably delivered and cared for the majority of the families in the restaurant.
Right.
And that's a very beautiful space to hold. Mm-hmm. And when I was an intern doing internal medicine at Mount Sinai, I loved it so much. And it's just like you're in the trenches and people are coding and you're bringing them back to life and nothing feels more powerful or more important.
Right.
And then you switch on July 1 to dermatology and you're managing like skin diseases and they may go away, they may not.
Yeah.
And you're like, here's a cream. And it just didn't feel what I knew and what was defined for me as medicine for, at the time.
Okay.
And, you know, to exclamation point that the mm-hmm. chairman from the department was yeah. like, we'll open up a spot for you. You come back to New York. You are a healer.
Right.
You need to be in this space. So it mm-hmm. almost like made me feel like I was less than a healer mm-hmm. To choose the path of dermatology, which
sure.
often gets a kind of a bad rap for the mm-hmm. aesthetic component that
okay.
it is.
Yeah.
That it has. Mm-hmm. I think that certainly played into why I chose to do my fellowship in skin cancer surgery. That made it a little bit more legitimized
sure.
in my life.
Yeah.
And it's funny, my parents are fantastic. I adore them. And they're, of course, kind and supportive and proud, but I joke that my father's the only man in the world who was ever disappointed when his daughter matched in dermatology because it was just like, wait
yeah.
a minute, no, you're supposed to be with us, like
yeah.
saving the world.
Mm-hmm.
Not to discount anything that we do, but
sure.
I was going to practice with him and
yeah.
that was just kind of the path.
Mm-hmm.
So I have found, obviously, copious meaning, and I'm like, thank God I do what I do every day. I love my job. My husband is like, I've never mm-hmm. seen anyone who's so happy to
yeah.
go to work every
yeah.
day. I mean, I have so much impact in people's lives, and this is where the psychology does play in a lot, that you aren't just making people look better, but you're making them like themselves more
yeah.
and how they look.
Mm-hmm.
And
they become more productive.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it translates yeah. into every aspect of life.
Absolutely.
As far as you are, if you look in the mirror and you feel better, I always joke that the same person coming into my office is not the same person leaving.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. way they carry themselves, the way that they connect with others, they're
yeah.
a better spouse, they're a better mom, they're a better worker.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that they feel good. And
yeah.
whether that's a good night's sleep or getting your nails done, you know, it
right.
doesn't have to just be through aesthetics, but
right.
It really is transformative.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to see that transformation.
Yeah.
I've done a procedure and to see someone look in the mirror and like themselves better.
And their eyes light up.
It's,
yeah.
it's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And so I hold that very dear to my heart, and I'm very grateful that I stayed the course that
so
I had selected.
All the cards were stacked towards you becoming an internist. What was it that ultimately, because I know it was a lot, you grew up down the street from Elizabeth Arden's,
yeah.
you know, winter home. So obviously that was always in the back of your mind and whatnot. But what was it ultimately that made you decide to say, yes, I'm going to do dermatology?
I think that it's so hard to get a spot in dermatology, quite honestly. It's a
yeah.
very competitive specialty.
You
and
were saying like three out of,
three
what, 600?
Yeah,
like there
yeah.
are three?
A
that's
year.
Incredible. Holy
so,
smokes.
And everybody's the same
yeah.
on paper. It's not like I was just head and shoulders above the rest. I mean,
okay.
it is divine intervention and a lot of luck that I got in.
Yeah.
And because the person who didn't was just as good.
Sure.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all look the same on paper.
Better to be lucky than good, right?
And so it was such a struggle
yeah.
to get there and to get a spot. And literally people were like, are you insane that
yeah.
you're even thinking about giving up on that?
Sure.
And so thankfully, I didn't disrupt that course. Now that
mm-hmm.
said, I might've been blissfully happy in medicine as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for, the consulting that I get to do,
yeah.
that certainly looks different than if I were in general medicine.
Yeah.
And certainly the flexibility that I have with two little children.
Yes.
It allows for, you know, mm-hmm. if I want to take Ellis, my daughter, to ballet on
yeah.
Tuesday afternoons at 4:30.
Yeah.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you don't have that flexibility all the time with call and hospital
mm-hmm.
and whatnot.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And so you were here for 2 weeks in New York and then you decided you're not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Your reputation as a dermatologist is incredibly important. As a doctor in general, incredibly mm-hmm. important. How did you start making your way in New York? Obviously a very different market than Somerville, South Carolina.
Yeah.
How did you start building your reputation and view it in terms of building up your practice?
I think that, and this is still the most flattering way to get patients because you
yeah.
can't buy word of mouth. And
right.
I do think I have a lot of girls who come to me now who are
mm-hmm.
residents. And, you know, when I came along, Instagram and social media was not a thing.
Right, yeah.
And it is more so in our space with the visual component of it, showing
yeah.
your before and afters and, like, your procedures in office. That's
mm-hmm.
much more than people watching someone be a doctor in the ICU.
Right.
They're just,
yeah.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes more of an ancillary part of our job than in other specialties. But these girls will come to me and they're like, how did you become you? And I'm like, I worked really hard and did a good job in my day job first. You don't seek it the other way. You don't go to just be Instagram famous.
Right.
Is my counsel always. Do what you train to do. Be very good at it. And then the opportunities will come. And that is honestly how it happened for me. There was a company who was doing appeal session with the media in our office, nothing to do with me.
Sure.
And one of the brand people literally was like, hey, who's that? She seems nice. And so we met. And then all of a sudden, I was the consulting dermatologist for Clearasil for a couple years. And that literally happened just like that. And it's funny, like the evolution of me as I've grown up, you go from like acne drugstore brand to then more elegant as you go, you know, and and that's how it should be. You don't come right out consulting for, you know, these mega luxury brands, not often. Because, you know, this is the one beautiful space where getting older is actually, you kind of get better because people respect you a little bit more. You know, it's tough in most things where you're interfacing with media, but there is something about being too young as a doctor that people don't trust you as much.
Right.
And so it's nice, it's nice to age into your expertise and literally to be like, I have done this for 14 years.
Right.
People kind of look at you like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Then you do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And how much does bedside manner play into your ability to build that reputation? Because obviously the skill has to be there. There's no question about that. And it's very transparent if it is there or isn't there, because there's a before and after.
Yes, for sure. Yes.
And then how much of bedside manner it enables you to land a brand partnership because somebody said, oh, she's nice, she's smart, I like, you know, that you know.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not unlike your wife who, you know, if brands like you, they want to work with you. They're human too, you know? I mean, it's probably honestly why I got a spot in dermatology. Like the residents were like, look, we're all human at the end of the day. We have to hang out with you for 3 years. We want to like you. It's the same thing.
Right.
You know, humans, we all want to like niche ourselves into different, but we're all so alike. And like I just shot something earlier and they were like, this was great. They loved it. You know, we're all hugging at the end. That's a pleasant experience for everyone. And I tell these, you know, I get sent a lot of influencers to treat, and the ones who I enjoy treating and who are allowed to come back are the ones who are kind and behave. You know, you have to be a nice individual in any space. And then it kind of falls into place. But yes, bedside manner is hard to teach. You kind of almost have it or you don't. I mean, of course you can kind of soften some of the edges that people have, but I think that I had an amazing leg up by growing up in the family that I did.
I'm sure,
because
yeah.
my mom is like the most caring person on the planet. And my dad is an excellent doctor who is kind of like the Norman Rockwell image of like white hair, white beard. Like he's the guy you want to go to. And he's very cerebral and you're like, he's thoughtful about everything. Nothing is dismissed. And so
you grew up with that Southern charm too, I'm sure.
Well, that I think does play well in New York.
At first,
you know, I remember like day one of Sinai wearing like bright green hot pants and not blending. And they were probably like, how did she sneak in? You know, with like my, hey y'all. And, but then, you know, it is different, but it's, but people respond well to it. And once they know that you are smart,
because
that's the other
up.
Stigma that people don't think that you're bright if you have an accent or you're from down south. Then they really like it because it's very different than what they're used to, but in a warm way.
A warm way, right. Absolutely. And how tough is it in New York? Because obviously you came from this small town, right? How tough is it to make your way in New York as a doctor?
I feel like you have to, I mean, I love New York because you work hard. Like people were like, what was it like to train in New York City? I'm like, it was the best because you didn't feel like you were missing out because the lawyers are working just like you are. The bankers are working just like you are. You weren't alone. When I was in the hospital on a Saturday morning at 5 a.m. and my friends were still out from the night before, you know, that feels like you're all alone. But here everybody works. And so I think that I know I like to work. I'm a hard worker. I think if you put your nose down and do what you're supposed to do, like the success follows. So it has not been a struggle where I'm like, okay, let's strategize. Like, how am I going to grow my practice? I thankfully became busy pretty quickly and have been able to maintain that. Volume.
Of course.
Which is nice and flattering, but still to me, like you can't by word of mouth. So if someone's like, who should I go to? That's my highest compliment when people are like, you treated someone in my office. She said you were great. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, because it's not like we go around and talk about, hey, I went to the dentist and it was amazing, or hey, I went to the dermatologist and it was amazing. If it was that good that they're bringing it up, you know that you're doing something right.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the years, you've consulted for a number of celebrities and appeared on a number of shows. Like, when was your first kind of break into kind of the celebrity, the TV, the big media space in terms of your celebrity doctorhood, if you would?
So the very first time I was on Dr. Oz, I had done a lot of like local stuff, and I think I had done some other national ones, but for a physician to be chosen to be on a physician show is kind of, for us, the penultimate.
Yeah.
And I was 8 months pregnant
with
my son.
Oh, that's incredible.
And they make you wear a white coat when you do his show. So, I mean, you know, I like to look nice, and I did not want to highlight, and you never wear white on TV. It already makes you look bigger. So a white coat is not flattering, nor is being 8 months pregnant, but you don't say no.
No, of course not.
And so I went, and that one is shot in front of a live audience.
Sure.
So even though the show's not live, they're not going to retape for you.
No,
if he messes up, they'll stop, but you know, you are not that important.
Yeah.
And so also, like, I didn't do theater. I've never been like a performer
you
in that way.
Did you have any media training at that point?
I had had one session of media training when I was with Clearasil.
Okay.
And we had done like satellite media tours, and where you're kind of like in one room and they're videoing you and you're being broadcasted in Dallas and Denver and whatnot.
Okay.
But not for TV, and not to like think, well, this camera's on me and I need to look at this thing. I mean, that's also the thing. You're thinking about what you're saying, but also how you look. And
you're like, don't screw up, but also look at the cameras.
Yeah,
also,
smile. You know?
Yeah.
One of my colleagues who was out there, she was like, don't make that face. I was like, what face? And you know, you just don't know what you're doing until you've had the experience. And so I walked on set and it's 200 people. Mm-hmm. I mean, that in and of itself, I remember being like, I don't remember anything I'm supposed to say.
Yeah.
And it was a whole skin drink, like a diet you were supposed to follow for 24 hours. And it was like all these very nuanced differences between the polyphenols that were in this green juice and the beta carotene that was in this.
Yeah.
And so you had to make sure that it was right. And you have no notes. He has a teleprompter.
Oh, but you don't.
But you don't. And so I was like, I didn't even know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I think it worked out right. But it's one of those things where you almost like black out. I came out, came
like
off, and I was like, I don't know what I said, if it was right. But apparently it was okay enough to be asked back. So that was good.
Well, how did you get the initial invitation?
Somebody who I'd treated had worked with them. And
so
they brought
word
me on
mouth.
To meet them.
Yeah.
Yes. And was just like, she'd be great on TV. And
it
was interesting though. TV often, you know, in the world of dermatology and especially aesthetics, like if I just came from an elite women in dermatology conference yesterday.
Yeah.
And the women are like glammy, you know, we wear heels and we dress and we wear makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And for TV, it was funny that they were like, but you need to have your hair in a ponytail. You need to wear low shoes. They I came in, they took my makeup like off.
Really?
Yeah. And
oh, wow.
I mean, you have to look the part of a doctor. And it was funny that they like, that is the part of a dermatologist. That is how we look in more metropolitan areas. But
well, you don't want to go to a dermatologist who has bad skin or doesn't, right? Because that's part of it, right? It's aesthetics.
I mean, I always say that. You would go to a dentist with bad teeth when people are like, you have nice skin. I'm like, I have to.
Yeah.
You're judging me more.
Right.
You know,
100%.
Like you wouldn't believe that I knew
You're
what
your
I was
own
talking
best
about.
Advertisement, right? Yeah.
So anyway,
interesting.
It was funny. They were like, they want to like make you molded still to like a more doctor look. And I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's probably a whole nother world of discussion for a different day. But also, it kind of shakes you a bit if that's what you're used to. And then they kind of deconstruct you. You're like, well, I don't even like the way I look. I don't even know what I'm going to say now. And I'm 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
So I was playing, I was playing very hurt that
day. You had a
lot
of intervening factors, but it worked out well. So
after
that happened, did you think about, okay, I can use this as a tool to build my practice? How did you think about in terms of building on that momentum? Or is that not something you even thought about? You're like, hey, if it happens again, great.
Yeah. I think that, At first, it's like very compelling and you're like, oh, that was great. And it must legitimize me as a doctor if they want me on.
Yeah.
And then you realize there are just a lot of different kind of marionette strings in the background that are pulling who they choose and why. And so now I really have come to a much healthier space of like, I'm not going to track this down. I'm not going to make it happen when it's meant to. It does.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the producers was in on Friday for ABC and he was like, why haven't you been on Oz in a while? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I didn't even think about it.
Sure.
But he was like, call Kathy, tell her you need to be on. I'm like, well, you know, I don't know that I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is you don't say no,
sure.
But these guys don't ever really plan in advance. So
oh,
it's
really?
Like,
okay.
You get a call on Monday for Thursday and I've got 54 patients on Thursday. Like that's tough.
That
so you
really
have your
tough.
Obligation to your patients and your patient load.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a fine play between like, is this really at this point, like meaningful, you know, if it's on skin cancer and reaching masses where you're really educating or, you know, is it one that I'm going to pass on because the segment may be on like skin toners, you know, like something that's not necessarily needing a dermatologist could also be answered by like an esthetician.
Sure.
So I just have to play that out in like, what is the reach? What is the goal?
Yeah.
And like try to take my ego out of it as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to be on TV.
Of course.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
But you have to just make sure like what's the end game here and is it worth it? There's always a counter. I mean, it's very rare that they call on a Monday when I'm not seeing patients where it would be perfect.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's funny because I never knew that not growing up in and around TV that how last minute things are.
Yeah.
You would think they'd have the whole year planned.
Of course.
But I mean, it's like
they're throwing
segments out like 2 days before.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Well, so you started to build a following and now you've built a following. You've become a bit of an influencer when it comes to skincare in particular, obviously. How has that affected your more quote unquote traditional career, right? So you think about doctors, lawyers, accountants, you don't think about them using social media perhaps, but has that helped you build your practice, have an impact on people? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I think that it has driven in patients who want a certain aesthetic and they're able to see without even meeting me first. Cause usually that was the way you would do it is kind of have a book of your before and afters. If you're in a plastics or derm, you would say like, this is what you can expect. These are my results.
Okay.
And you'd have to like keep that up, like almost like a scrapbook.
Yeah.
So this is so much easier, honestly, than like pull out the book and let's go through things or like, here's it on my phone. And you have to have permission from all these patients. So it's so much easier in that you're showcasing, and that's where people go first, even before our website often.
Yeah.
Is they go to your personal Instagram to see your results.
Sure.
And that actually helps me because they already have a sense of who I am and my aesthetic before coming. I don't have super obvious inflated lips, for example. And if somebody has that aesthetic and that's what they want, then I'm not going to be the right provider for me. So it actually helps to kind of like pre-filter who comes to me.
Self-selecting.
Yeah, okay. It's nice. I actually really enjoy the patients who are like, I love what you did with this. And so they can kind of see it before I've even seen them. It is a challenge. I mean, as you know, getting content all the time, like it's, I'm not one of those.
Do you feel like, pressure to do that?
Some days because I have a social media manager who's like, we have got to get, you know, and I'm like, I know, but I'm like in it seeing patients. And often what happens for me is I'm like, so in the patient experience that I'm like halfway done and I'm like, oh, we didn't get a before picture for this. This would have been beautiful. Like you're almost done and it looks beautiful. And you're like, I so wish that I had thought to get that.
Right.
But I also think that's probably what you want in a doctor who's not just looking to showcase their talent. Like I'm all about the patient being happy. And then that's great if we can also show others. But I think that it is just another thing to do at the end of the day. It's a lot. But people want to see it. And I think you can either put your head in the sand and say, I'm not going to do this. Or you can realize like that is the life we're living right now.
Sure.
So you can either play the game and do it as best you can.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm great at it, but I try to engage and show like who I am, which I do think people like. I show my children. A lot of people don't. I respect that. But I think I love my children. I want to share them. They're so cute and
sweet. It's part of who you are.
Yeah. I now feel like I need to be a little bit more real, because everyone's like, your life is so great. And I'm like, no, you're not seeing like
right.
the disaster that's at home. You know, like behind the scenes, right, like me falling right. asleep in the Uber on the way home from work. You know, right. like yeah. there's a lot. Of course, it's not like Instagram pretty, but I don't want to give a false sense that like life is perfect, because yeah. it's certainly not.
No.
And I try to like have fun with it and yeah. enjoy it
yeah.
and give a sense of like who I am. Mm-hmm. But you just need to be who you are, you yeah. know, like that's the one thing when it's mm-hmm. too curated and too perfect, sure. it's a little bit insincere. Yeah.
And are there some things, some principles perhaps from how you've approached it that you think other more quote unquote traditional careers like lawyers and other doctors and accountants could take to kind of build their businesses, whether it's locally, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're an OBGYN in, you know, a small town in the middle of Texas mm-hmm. and you're trying to have a bigger impact and yeah. develop, like, are there a few principles that you think?
I think people are thirsty for knowledge in mm-hmm. whatever space that is. So yeah. if you're an accountant and you have knowledge that I don't,
yeah.
Now that's a little bit hard to make sexy, right? But even if you did like a little, you know, like, I do a tip Tuesday every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. You know, that's fun. Yeah. You did something like that, that people are like, oh my gosh, I love this guy. Like, he's giving me free advice that's yeah. super useful or not, but at yeah. least it's something that he's trying to communicate.
Right.
Or if you're, you know, an OBGYN, like mm-hmm. by all means, people have questions. And so it is a platform where people go to get information.
Yeah.
And if you are an expert in that field, because mm-hmm. Lord knows we've got people who are flooding it, who are claiming to be, yeah. but aren't credentialed to be,
right.
You will individualize yourself, mm-hmm. individuate, I guess, yourself away yeah. from those who are just spewing misinformation.
Right.
And so I would say have a voice, mm-hmm. use your platform wisely. I think that people, if you do have a following, you need to be responsible with that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people who claim to be skincare experts are giving way, like, very yeah. bad information.
That was going to be my next question.
Not right.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are the skincare and skin disease experts. And I think mm-hmm. sometimes that gets clouded out because people are flashier or more yep. emotive about it in
sure.
their sharing.
Yeah.
And so people tend to listen to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that there aren't influencers who have infinite knowledge on skincare.
Sure.
That's
mm-hmm.
not what I'm saying. I think that as a dermatologist, if I'm not giving information about skincare and skin mm-hmm. disease, then I'm not doing my job. Or at
right.
least this is another way to reach people who can't get to me mm-hmm. as well. So
yeah.
I find it like part of my responsibility. And this is like the nicest platform of free advertisement.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. that's what I say to when I give conferences. I'm like, yeah. if you're not using social media, like, that's on you. I mm-hmm. may not like it, but hire someone who does, because your patients want to know you
yeah.
and they want to know what you offer. And also, you don't have to pay for it.
Right.
Like, it's one of the few things that's
yeah.
like still free.
And it gives your patients a lot of comfort even before they walk
yeah.
in the door. Like you said, they feel like they know you.
Yeah.
They know what they can expect,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think, yeah, it's incredibly important. But mm-hmm. I want to touch on something that you alluded to or mentioned. There's a lot of information and there are a lot of experts out there.
Mm-hmm.
How much content are you seeing these days that is cringeworthy from your perspective, given all of the quote unquote experts who,
yeah.
you know, spout off?
There's a fair amount that
yeah.
I'm worried about.
Yeah.
And especially in the younger generation who's
uh-huh.
so susceptible
yeah.
to
impressionable. Yeah.
Yeah. To mm-hmm. they don't, now I'm definitely showing my age and my motherhood, but, you know, to celebrity effects.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that could be from any kind of movement, but in skincare
right.
in particular,
yeah.
You know, where there was like the Kylie Jenner lip challenge and they were doing the shot glass
yeah.
and like
yeah.
trying to get their lips bigger. And then if that broke and you aspirated, like, these are potentially like
yeah.
very detrimental trends that like, mm-hmm. when she wasn't being sincere about the fact that she'd had injectables and just said that she was doing these kinds of techniques to plump
yeah.
her lips, like
yeah.
that is potentially like not just bad, but dangerous.
Dangerous, right.
And I think that in the world of the internet, which is so vast,
yeah.
there's so much misinformation out there.
Mm-hmm.
And with the, even with the bigger channels of like some of the magazines who are having to push out content like 6 and 7 skincare stories a day.
Oh,
it's not like we're having that much breaking news daily in skincare, and they're not fact checking anymore because they're on a deadline and they have to get it out. And I'll be like, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Like just copy and paste my quote, you know, but they're just in a time crunch. And these are like people who really should know skincare.
Yeah.
So I just want everyone to take everything with a grain of salt that just because it makes it to the internet or to social media, it may not be, you know, the holy grail.
Of course. Now, if you're an influencer who does care about skincare and spends a lot of time, effort, obviously you have a medical degree, right? You've done residency, you have 15 years, 14 years of experience. Like you have this, you've spent your, dedicated your whole life to this, right? So you know the ins and outs. If you're an influencer who doesn't, but you get a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Where do you go for all of this information, right? Because they don't have access to someone like you.
And honestly, there have been certain nuances that I have Googled, because there was one lip line that she asked me a question, and her whole entire world is just on care for lips.
Oh,
and it
really?
Was wrong.
Okay.
Like she was like, you know, the lips don't have sebaceous glands, right? You know, and, and I looked, and the first 4 pages of Google substantiate that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, how is she supposed to know? Like,
right,
I've done surgery on the lip. I see it under the microscope. I know dermatopathologists who I can be like, I'm not wrong here. They have fewer, but they still have them, you know? And so it's very hard. And that is where you really do want to get your information from an expert, because like, if you only have the internet as your source, like, I don't know how many people would do a deep dive to page 11 to get the answer.
Right.
Like if it's the first three and, hits and one of them's WebMD and it's wrong.
Yeah.
Like I don't blame them for
and
not
how do you
knowing.
Know, you know, page 11 is right.
Right.
And page,
exactly.
Page
you would
one
think
is
it
wrong.
Wasn't.
Right.
But yeah. So it is tricky. I would say if you have a big following in a space where you haven't been trained and dedicated your whole life's work to it. And some people, like, they just are good at getting people to follow them and they believe them and trust them, but align yourself with someone who you can, who you trust, who you can get the answers from, because we don't always have all the answers. I mean, I learn about new ingredients all the time from beauty editors who are like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, hold please while I Google, you know, because like, we're not, you know, we're like managing skin disease and like not everything brand new off, like out of a formulator's lab is being brought to my attention. It doesn't make our journals, honestly, often until it's already on the market.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, even I, as a skincare expert, there are things I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have a way to vet out the science behind
them.
And so that is something that can be tricky if you didn't do that kind of training.
Right.
But, you know, the good news is if you're have a significant following, I think most experts are going to avail themselves to help you and to educate it. And you don't even have to deliver the message. You could say, can I interview you as a dermatologist about this? This is kind of tricky. And I keep getting a question on retinol, you know, like everyone knows they're supposed to use it, but then it like tears their face up.
Sure.
What's the story there?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. So I think that, the good news is we're all connected via this medium.
Yeah.
So there are ways to get to an expert that maybe before me in Somerville, South Carolina would have never been able to reach a beauty editor or a physician in New York City.
Well, let me ask you this, because I think that's great advice and it's something that people should be doing and they should be fact checking, especially when it comes to things like if you're talking about like things that maybe aren't life or death or maybe can't be harmful. Mm-hmm. It's one thing. It's when it's a personal recommendation, that's one thing, like personal style, for instance. But you as fresh out of college or fresh out of residency practicing for the first 3 or 4 years, let's call it, you're now 14 years into this, right? So you have all of this experience. Would you have had the same answers you do now back then in terms of when you get questions? Because maybe you hadn't been doing surgery for 14 years. So in terms of selecting the proper expert, right? Because you can't just go to any doctor and expect them to have the right, you know, just because they're a dermatologist, right?
No, well, that is...
So how do you even select amongst... And we're getting into the weeds here, but how do you even select the right expert?
That's fair. And that is harder because... certainly my answers have evolved with my experience and with the tools that are now available. I mean, there are devices and lasers and treatments and topicals and actives and skincare that didn't exist 14 years ago. So, so
and we're also just getting smarter because of the scientific process as a society, right?
Yeah.
It's like we're learning now certain things that we're putting into our bodies shouldn't be going. You know, it's so there is a bit of an evolution there.
Of course.
Right?
And they say in medicine that the amount of medical information we have doubles every 7 years.
That's crazy.
So it's wildly expansive, mm-hmm. and you have to keep up, and you have to always be continuing your medical education in order to stay on top of the game. But that's also what's fun about it,
right?
Is that it's not always the same.
Right.
You know, it's not like math is going to be math. Although apparently there's a new math, but we
that new math, yeah.
So selecting your expert as someone to pick their brain is probably a little bit like how you would find your doctor or your dentist or your whatever, either through, I mean, the good news is people are showing themselves to you. So do you like them? Do you think that they're articulate? Are they able to make difficult topics manageable for those who don't have a, that's a talent in and of itself.
It's huge talent.
And it's hard
because
you learn it in one language and then you have to deduce, you know, you have to like break it down to digestible bites so that everyone else who doesn't have a medical degree can even begin to know what you're talking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I would say, follow some people who you think are putting out good content and make sure that that's a match with you and that, that they would be receptive to helping you. I mean, you may not be, you might not hit it out of the park on your first go.
Of course,
and they may not, they may not be willing to help. But most of us, especially in the dermatologic space and those who make ourselves available through social media, are used to people reaching out. And that's a high compliment. So don't feel bad about that. And if that one says no, then ask another. Have like a top three.
Yeah. And I think that's smart. I think there is no substitute for time and research, right? So if you want to do a post, for instance, on something in the dermatology space, find three or four experts, like you said, and just spend some time watching them from a distance and looking at the content that they're putting out and fact checking them, right? Because once you cross, and maybe sending in a few questions and saying, hey, what about this?
Yeah.
And there's just, there's no substitute for time.
Yeah.
And you'll get a feel for who they are and comfort level. And usually you'll be able to sniff out whether or not you think that they're, you know, legitimate
the right fit.
Or not.
Yeah, because you're establishing a relationship that's helping you be better at your job.
Right.
And so put that effort in because it's boosting you and your availability to communicate with your audience. And so you do owe it to those who follow you to do a little bit of diligence.
Absolutely.
And vet out the expert too.
Yeah.
Cause we all know influencers who put out a lot of content, but it's not particularly mindful nor responsible nor necessarily factual.
You're right. They're trying to hit those deadlines.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what is the one piece of advice you would have for doctors, lawyers, professionals in the traditional sense, right, who are looking to take advantage of social media to build their businesses? If they could focus on one thing, what would it be?
I got asked this because I was on a panel for Create and Cultivate.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I am the smallest fish on this stage by far.
But probably the most important and the most well-educated, certainly.
That I might have had more degrees. But
yeah,
other
right.
than that, they were, you know, had tons of followers and really had big impact. And I was like, why am I even invited here?
But have you ever been on the Dr. Oz show?
8 months pregnant and without your heels.
Right.
So I think, and it probably sounds redundant, but sometimes these things just come to fruition because they are true. But you have to be authentic. You have to be yourself. And if you're like a miserly little curmudgeon who's really good at law, like maybe that's what somebody likes and resonates with, and play it up a little bit. And
for
it's funny, like people might really like that. So
100%.
Don't hide it. Don't fake through your
that's
smile.
That's who I want is my
right?
lawyer.
I want that lawyer. I mean, not to terribly stereotype that
of
whole
course,
profession.
No. Well, both my parents are lawyers. My wife's parents are lawyers. Our oldest siblings are lawyers.
Okay. Well, I apologize in advance.
No. Believe me, the lawyer jokes run long in our family. So,
but you know, like if that's who, like I'm not funny. I really want to be, but if I tried all the time to be funny, then I would probably not have any following because they'd be like, she is awful. But I have cute kids and I play up to that, you know, like, so I think that, whatever it is, like one, spend some time thinking about what you want to project and what is your goal. If it's to get busier, then that's one goal. If yeah. it's to really have a fun following who likes you or thinks mm-hmm. that, you know, find your niche
yeah.
and then go from there. But mm-hmm. just to be all over the map where one day you're wearing a new blazer and the next day you're talking about skin and then the next day you're telling your favorite book.
Yeah.
Like maybe those are too vast unless you're just like a huge lifestyle
sure.
influencer. But right. by and large, and you tell me, you know this space better than I, but like I think most people like stay in their wheelhouse. And yep. every once in a while you may go rogue and go, I know I don't really talk about perfume lots, but I love this perfume. And, it,
right.
and also like, don't go into it because you think someone's going to pay you to talk about it.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
like if you legitimately love something, mm-hmm. you can get on a brand's radar that way
yep.
by just talking about it. But mm-hmm. it becomes much more of an authentic relationship. I've had more brands come to me because I just said, I use this and I like it
yeah.
than ever where they're just coming and being like, oh, you're mm-hmm. a dermatologist who works with the media. Let me pitch this to you.
Sure. Yeah.
So it goes both ways. Like mm-hmm. you get on their radar some way and they get on yours.
Yeah.
But I guess that is really all over the map, but kind of stay in your lane.
Yeah.
And also define who you want to be and project that as true as much as you can in a very authentic way.
So that when people walk through the door, they know exactly yeah. who they're going to run into.
Yeah. You yeah. never want them to walk through and be like, you're nothing like I thought.
No,
exactly. Like, 'cause then you've put up a false sense.
It's of a, and it's
persona.
A self-selecting process.
Yeah.
So
right.
you know, facilitate that.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Kind of give them a sense of what it would be like to be in your office mm-hmm. or to meet you. Without yeah. having that opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously you get patients coming from all over. Like what are the two or three principles kind of your practice that you stick to no matter who it is that walks through your door?
Yes. So I feel like my background in psychology plays in a lot
yeah.
with my patients mm-hmm. In order to kind of tease out what they're saying and what they're not saying. Because a
sure.
lot of them who are naive to any kind of aesthetic procedure are very worried mm-hmm. that they are going to look very different or that everyone's going to know that they've done something.
Sure.
And I always say the best work is undetectable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want them to look better and enhance, but mm-hmm. I don't want anyone to be like, you did your lips, you know,
yeah,
something
sure.
where it's so obvious that mm-hmm. you can't not
yeah.
bring it up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we all have these ideals and are bombarded by images and,
yeah.
you know, social media where people are altering their
yeah.
pictures or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And so some idea of beauty, and oftentimes it can be too enhanced.
Sure.
And so in my hands, you know, I like much more subtle, we call them tweakments instead of treatments, like tiny tweaks in order
sure.
to like help people look mm-hmm. their best, but not different,
mm-hmm.
not like themselves.
Sure.
And so that plays into the second tenet, which is making them their best you,
mm-hmm.
but not making them different. When someone brings in a picture of Angelina Jolie's lips or
uh-huh.
so-and-so's jawline,
yeah.
I'm like, no, we put that away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do what's best for you, but you don't want to give somebody else's features that
sure.
may not fit your proportions, your facial anatomy, your contour.
Yeah.
Because it would change their whole look. And that's
sure.
not what we're looking for. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm looking for
yeah.
in aesthetic enhancements. It's more to make them the best version of them,
mm-hmm.
but not different.
Sure.
And that's where the art of medicine comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a mix of art and science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the beauty of it. And it wouldn't be fair for me if I didn't ask you this last question before I let you go. So let's end on a fun note. Obviously, highly respected doctor in the dermatology space.
Mm-hmm.
You have access to the best products, best treatments, all of that. You've seen it all,
mm-hmm.
and you know kind of what works and what doesn't. So if there were only three things
mm-hmm.
that you could include in your beauty routine,
mm-hmm.
what would they be?
I would say...
She's going through the catalog of tens of thousands of products in her brain right now.
You should
now
see my bathroom. It looks like Sephora.
I can't imagine.
It's atrocious. I mean, there's just so much. So this is like stressing me out just to think. But no, there are two that are definite, and then I'm wiggling on the third.
Okay.
But the two definite, and no dermatologist is worth their salt if we don't say sunscreen, because
okay.
it really is, and not to use a Southern expression, but an ounce of prevention
mm-hmm.
is worth a pound of cure. So
okay.
and that's in anything in medicine.
Yeah.
you don't want to get diabetes, you want to prevent having diabetes, you know? You don't want to get skin cancer, you want to prevent it. And that happens in beauty too. Mm-hmm. It is so much easier to not get the brown spot than to correct it once it's there.
Right.
So it's not sexy and nobody wants to hear about it and everyone's like, yeah, but tell me. But if you look at the real studies that show SPF versus not, like, it's super compelling.
Yeah.
You will really look much younger and better for so much, for decades longer if you just do that easy step.
Mm-hmm.
Retinol, I am a big fan of,
or
a vitamin A derivative.
Okay.
Because so many things that patients come to me complaining about, whether it's fine lines, wrinkles, sun damage, brown spots, texture, tone, building collagen, building elastin, reversing sun damage, it does all of that. So it's like the catch-all for whatever ails you.
Sure.
And then I was going to either say a topical antioxidant in the morning, which I really do love, like a vitamin C or E.
Mm-hmm.
Or both, and or a hyaluronic acid for hydration.
Okay,
but I'm on the fence with those. Is that a
no? That's fine. That no, that's great. I'm sure you'll have many a ear listening in and going out. And well, everybody should hopefully be already wearing sunscreen.
But I know.
Maybe that's not built into our psyche yet.
Yeah, but it's that's one that. I mean, if you had a dermatologist who didn't say that, then you'd just not be doing it.
No tall dermatologists listening in. Well, Dr. Dendy, thanks so much for joining us today in Influencer Business. It's been great to have you.
Thank you.
Just a great conversation with Dr. Dendy. If you don't already, go follow her. That's D-R-D-E-N-D-Y. That's her Instagram handle. Just a lot of great things coming out of that interview with her. A few I want to touch on here. First and foremost, the most important thing is you can't buy word of mouth. And this is so true. It doesn't matter what you do. We all think about going viral. We all think about how can we grow. But the reality is if you do a good job, if you do what you're trained to do, as she said, the opportunities will come and the word of mouth will spread. And that's how you can build your business, build your following, providing good service and do what you're trained to do. The second thing that she talked about is people are thirsty for knowledge. Obviously, if you're an influencer and you're listening to this, you know that. They're really thirsty for knowledge, and so provide them with knowledge. But one thing that she caveats it with is that if you have a platform, you have to make sure that your information is accurate because there's a lot of bad information circling out there. And as she pointed out on the podcast, sometimes simply Googling something will not surface the actual real truth. Sometimes you have to go to an expert and make sure that you're really getting the real facts, the true facts, as opposed to what you find on the internet. And so with a platform comes great responsibility. So people are thirsty for that knowledge, but make sure it's accurate. I think those two points are incredibly important as you're looking to build your business. Make sure you're doing what you're trained to do. Make sure you're putting out great content, being consistent, being who you are. Word of mouth will take care of the rest. The other thing that I like to take away from chatting with Dr. Dendy is that even if you're in a more traditional profession, quote unquote, traditional profession, doctor, lawyer, accountant, use social media to your advantage. She gave the example of an accountant who's kind of boring and cranky. There is a market for that. You can use it to your advantage. And if you're not, you're missing out because it's really the only form of free advertising, obviously, other than word of mouth. But use it. And if you don't like it, using social media, find somebody who does, who you can use to help leverage their expertise and build your business. Don't just ignore it because it seems hard or it's not in your wheelhouse. Find a way to use it to your advantage. Just an all-around great conversation with Dr. Dendy. Thanks again to her for joining us on the podcast. And thanks to you for listening. If you haven't already, please leave us that 5-star rating. Give us a glowing review. It always helps. Big shout out to my guy, Pete Crimmy, who always makes us sound better over the podcast than we do in person. And I'm your host, Rich Scudellari. Thanks for joining us this week on Influencer Business. We'll see you next time.